Welcome to The Future is Female Powerlifting. A show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I am your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60-kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you unlock your true inner strength potential. Thanks for tuning in. Aloha, my beautiful friends, and welcome back to episode number 14. I am so stoked to be here, and I got to bring on my homie, my friend, Miss Sin Leung. And this was a very awesome episode for so many reasons. It wasn't your typical episode. And as you'll find out, Sin and I have a different kind of friendship, and I value that so much because, you know, when you have a friend that you can just kind of get deep on, like you can sit there and you can talk about some deep shit and it's not so superficial. And, you know, you talk about things that are painful sometimes or scary. But those are the things that help you grow. And Sin has always been that friend for me. And I think it's just Sin herself. She is an amazing woman who is not only a badass in powerlifting, who is strong, 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 but she is also this dynamic woman in the professional world. She is a graphic designer by trade. She is also the head of graphic design for a supplement company called Chaos and Pain, who she's sponsored by. She's just so dynamic, and she has so many things that almost like layers to her that I just love. And she's unapologetically herself, which I love. Sin is a powerlifter, of course, and she's been training with Sweet Burns, who you all heard on our previous episode with Ellen Stein for, oh my gosh, many, many years now. And, you know, Sin is stinking strong. And when you go look up her name, she is extremely strong. And she credits a lot of that, if not all of it, to Swede and the FitSet methodology. And it's interesting because she actually takes on the fifth set in a way that is sort of a lifestyle. So she practices fifth set for her own life. And you'll hear more about that in the episode. I think you all will appreciate this episode because we got a little deeper into so many different areas. Femininity with powerlifting, attractiveness, challenges, how we actually create more freedom in our life through structure and habits. Sin gives some great tips on how to level up and be more focused and do more with your time and, you know, not spend so much time doing bullshit. And we kind of talk about that and how I had to really take a step back and look at where I was putting my time, because I do have a lot of, what is the term they say, pots on the stove, or I'm really bad with that analogy, but you know where I'm getting at. I always am doing multiple things, whether it's work, gym, events, and, you know, of course, this podcast. But, you know, there are areas that we can tighten up and be better. And I wanted to thank you, my listeners out there, all of you who are tuning in every 2 weeks. I thank you all for sending me messages and telling me what's up and taking your screenshots. Every time I've gotten a message, I'm always super happy that I can reach out to you. And I actually had a little conversation with Miss Megan Elizabeth, who is out in the UK, and her handle is Megan_Elizabeth_lifts. So if you find her, you go say what's up, say you heard her on the episode or me giving her a shout out. She's out in the UK, and she said, you know, I'm just starting out and I really enjoy listening to the podcast, and, you know, she doesn't really get a lot of exposure out there. And, you know, really, that's why I started this podcast, was to reach people everywhere who might not have other powerlifting women around them. I also want to say what's up to Miss this one always makes me laugh, Potato Powerlifter, Misha, whose handle is crazy. It's MKMMKMKO, which is like nuts. And then Viva La Juicy, Miss Sydney out there. I want to say what's up to you ladies. Thank you for reaching out and telling me hi. And thank you. Thank you for listening. And again, this episode is brought to you by my gym, Core Strength and Performance, out in Huntsville, Alabama. And you can come by and you can get stronger. We help people every day all different fitness levels, get stronger every day. Everything from powerlifting to small groups to personal training to athletic development. So if you want to hear more about that, visit www.core256.com, C-O-R-E-256.com. And don't forget to find us on Instagram. And that's Core SMP and the future. Actually, it's just future is female powerlifting. Let's get into it with Sin. So I ran out of coffee and I'm drinking the mushroom coffee.
Oh.
You know which one I'm talking about? That like everybody drinks. Yeah, it's actually not bad. I don't know if it has all the benefits. You know, I'm down with all the mushroom stuff. You know, I don't really eat a lot of mushrooms, so it's like, well, I should probably, I mean, so I'm down to drink it is what it is.
I like mushrooms in general. The food choice is
delicious. You're an Asian. You gotta like mushrooms.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. I think my boyfriend's allergic to them. So, like, I just eat all of them.
He's allergic to them? I've never heard of anybody being allergic to mushrooms.
Yeah, he's, like, allergic to them. It's weird. I'm like, you're so weird, but okay.
Well, my husband's allergic to the sun.
What? Who's he's not.
No, dude.
How can you be allergic to the sun?
He gets these huge welts, and it's, like, the amount of exposure. Yeah, and his skin starts to swell. Like, it looks like a layer, and then it has this weird, almost like a reptilian look to it. And no. So yes, and then it starts to swell, it does this whole thing, and then when it comes back down, it's all like grows and almost like a, not eczema, but it has that kind of where it's damaged skin, and it's really bad on certain parts. But yeah, so whenever he used to go out when we first started dating, he would like suck it up and come out with me because he didn't want to seem like a pansy who doesn't like is not allergic to the sun.
Turns out he's actually allergic to
I know. I was like, because we've tried everything. He can put on the thickest layer of sunblock. It just doesn't matter. I don't know what it is about the whole process, but.
That's fucking wild.
I know it is. So this is pretty much how it's going to be. Like, if you haven't heard it, this is kind of, I should take these earrings off because they tend to be very loud when I'm banging all over the place here. And this is pretty much it. And I really like to just have candid talks and, you know, talk about where you started. And I think the balance, you know, what we're talking about, the work-life balance and elective sports or elective competition where you're, you know, trying to, which makes me also think like, why do we try so hard in things that are really, we're not making money for, right? What is the need to want to compete? And I think that we sometimes have very compelling stories in text message
and
conversations.
It's very philosophical in nature.
I think so. So I guess we can start off by how did we meet? Let's tell all our people how we met.
We met on Instagram.
We did. It's like a couple.
We met on Instagram.
It's like a couple. I started thinking, I was like, we totally met on Instagram. I'm pretty sure I commented on a photo or a video or something you had. And then it kind of went back and forth. And I'm pretty sure I friended you on Facebook. Like your name.
Yeah.
You know, it was like one of those where like, oh, you might know this person because of your Instagram friend or whatever.
Right.
And then we started talking on Facebook all the time.
Right.
And I think it's so funny. Yeah. Like, and I remember, I think one of the funniest things I always say is like, that you told me was like, people don't really meet organically anymore.
They don't. Like, where are you going to meet people? Like what? You're going to roll up into somebody at the gym and they're gonna be like, why the fuck are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Like, get the fuck out of my face. Right. Like. Where are you going to meet people? It's so weird. Like, I met my boyfriend online. Like, I don't even know how I would meet, like, people.
How did you meet him? Where'd you meet him? I didn't even think about that.
We met on OkCupid.
What is that? I don't even know this one. Is this a new one?
It's yet another dating app. I don't know. It was so weird. Like, it's a funny story because, like, so the day that we matched on, like, a Thursday, and then it was, like, we started talking on, like, a Friday, and he wanted to hang out on, like, a Saturday. And I had agreed to it, but I had gone on like a really bad date a couple days ago where the guy literally did like 2 bumps of cocaine in front of me. He was like, this is cool, right? And I was like, what?
That's why weird. Is it always assumed that? Why would you assume that that's cool?
I don't know. But like, it was really bad. So I went home. And so like, you know, this guy was like, hey, you know, you want to go out, catch a movie or whatever. And I was like, yeah, sure. But then like, you know, I had gone into the gym. I had pulled like a million reps, like you know how Fitset works.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I had gotten home, hadn't heard from him. I was like, whatever. Showered, I'd put on my pajamas. I was like, I had my snacks. I was not
listening. You're in that mode already.
And one of my closest friends, and so like he hits me up and he's like, hey, you know, are we doing this? And I was like, my friend is texting me. He's like, you gotta go. I was like, but I'm like in my bed. And he's like, that's, you don't have a good enough reason to not go.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, so I went.
Where'd you guys go?
We went to, we snuck Chipotle into a movie.
Did you put it in your purse? That's always what happens. The woman has a purse.
No. He actually had a backpack. It was pretty,
oh my God,
was,
how funny.
It was pretty awesome.
He snuck Chipotle. Awesome. I snuck wine and like, of all people, with my mother. We were, our theater is super small and we snuck wine and I'm pretty sure cheese and crackers, like so bougie. Like, how did that happen? Like, my mom is so bougie and she's so hood at the same time. She's like, yeah, let's just bring this in. And we're over there like cutting cheese. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. It's like Hawaii people.
Oh, I love your mom. She's so cute.
She is, you know, she just left New York.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. She was just there with my dad. My dad never goes to New York anymore. Like he travels so much for his band. They're on tour and stuff, and they actually went to New York a few times. They were at the Lincoln Center. Right. Yeah, I'll let you know if they ever come. It's kind of fun to be a nice date.
Yeah.
Well, tell me, how did that first date go? I don't think I've ever really talked to you about this part. I just know like how much you like them. Ooh.
Honestly, it was great. You know, like it was kind of funny. It's kind of corny, right? Because like I don't buy into that like bullshit of like, oh, like you know when he's the one. Because yeah. I'm not that girl.
Yeah.
But the chemistry was like on point.
Yeah.
And he was just, he really wasn't like anybody I had ever met. And I really wasn't interested in dating anybody in powerlifting at all. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I need separation. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even, at that point, I didn't even date other designers because like, then I felt like I would never leave the office.
Right. Right.
So I didn't want to date powerlifters anymore. Well, one, because you know, I had exes and also like dating power within the powerlifting community. And I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of shit for saying it, but it's a little bit kind of incestuous after a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you know, it's a small community.
Each other, you know, like everyone's dated each other, slept mm-hmm. with each other. And you're like, I don't know which one of my friends you banged. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just gets really weird. I don't.
That's so true though. And you know, it doesn't happen with me obviously cause I'm married, but dude, I hear some shit.
Yo, but it'd be like that. And so I was like, I didn't want to date anybody in powerlifting. I didn't want to date anybody that worked in design. Technology was cool, but not design. So like, as weird as this sounds, like I kind of came into like, I stayed single for a while and I kind of came into dating with like, okay, here are like the five things that I absolutely have to have in a partner mm-hmm. and I'm not willing to commit to or settle down with anybody unless these five things are there and everything else is negotiable. Right. Mm-hmm. So
what were those five things?
I mean, they're pretty basic things. So like for me,
loyalty,
things. I actually, one of the things that was important to me was I needed somebody that was a competitive athlete.
Huh.
That was a really big deal for me because like, I compete twice a year.
Right.
I get really selfish twice a year.
Yeah.
For about a month and a half at a time. And then there's like another month and a half where you're like all depressed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, post me.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you've never gone through that process, you don't know what that feels like.
Yeah.
You can't relate. And, right. you know, like the sport is just such a huge part of my life because like most of my time is spent either competing, like either training or working.
Right.
And, you know, all the other things are kind of there, but the two primary fixed things in my life are work and training. And if you're not a person that trains for something, you know, you're going to look at this and approach it from the angle of, oh, you're like a girl that likes to lift weights. And it's like, no, I'm not a girl that lifts weights. Like right. that's not what this is.
Right.
And then, you know,
it's such a belittling concept, yeah. but there are a lot of people who think that, especially, I mean, I hate to say it, but there's women too that I've heard that same kind of comment, like almost like a compensation. Like,
right.
Right. I'm like, no.
Right. They're like, enjoy it. That's a cute hobby. Yeah, and right. you're like, Like, first of all, it's not, it is a hobby, but at the same time, it's an extreme version of that, right? Like,
right.
Who in their right fucking mind is like, hey, you know what's cool? You know what's a great idea today? I'm going to risk my safety, my health, my livelihood for fun. Let's just do it for fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, even if you have sponsors, right? Like, it's just for fun. You know, yeah. I'm really fortunate that, you know, I've been working with Chaos and Pain and they've backed me for years, but nevertheless, right. You know, like, I still have a full career.
Right. Yeah. No, it's totally true. And I think that's a great almost segue into, like, why did you start powerlifting?
It's kind of funny, you know, so, you know, like, my ex-husband was in the Navy, and it was funny because I was a totally different person.
Right.
About 10 years ago, I think I started competing maybe about 6 years ago, but I was a totally different person. And I had, like, all these issues. I had, like, anxiety problems, like, severe anxiety issues, super antisocial, like, not, you know, because by choice or anything like that. It was just, I had a really hard time, like, relating to people, and I had health issues. Mm-hmm. Not like I was terminal or dying, but, like, you know, my woman's cycle was constantly off. I had, like, crazy imbalanced hormones, and so I didn't have any friends. And my ex-husband, he was deploying. And all the wives in the boat were like, you know, they did the thing. Oh, you know, we're all going to get in shape when the guys are gone.
And, always happens.
Yeah, always happens. And I was like, you know what? I was like, I could do that. You know, like, they all joined a kickboxing gym. And I was like, I could do that. And I was like, you know, I didn't have any friends at the time. Like, I was, you know, like, living in the military is, like, really difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, you're constantly moving around. And so we went off and joined this kickboxing gym. You know, I have about 12 years of dance background in me from when I was much younger.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of people who powerlift that are like that. They have this weird dance background.
Right. It's so weird because, like, the dancing really didn't help me.
No.
You know, the dancing gave me, like, hypermobility, yeah. which was, like, a pain in the ass yeah. to, like, get rid of. But, yeah, so I went to the kickboxing thing and the dance background thing coupled with, like, a handful of years in martial arts when I was a kid, it just worked together really well.
Right.
And I took to it and, you know, like, I started seeing some improvements in, like, you know, how I felt, like, my mind wasn't in a fog all the time.
Right.
And then from there, it just kind of started branching out. And I was like, oh, like, let's learn, like, how to eat correctly, mm-hmm. you know, because... You know, and then over time, as what happens when you place a lot of very, I hate to say it, bored women together, things can be very dramatic.
Yeah.
So I left the kickboxing thing behind and I said to my brother, I'm like, yo, like, I don't want to stop being active. I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know what to do. And my brother's like, well, why don't you go lift weights? And I was like, well, I don't know how to do that. And he was like, I don't know, figure it out. I did. And I was like...
Okay.
So this is the saddest thing. This is so embarrassing. So I went on bodybuilding.com and I watched, like, so many videos. Like, you know those, like, tutorials of, like, how to do, like, an exercise?
Dude, are you kidding me? I think we've all had our profile. We've probably all done that challenge of the year or the semi-challenge or whatever $60,000 you're going to get. It's so funny. I think so many people start that way. And I think it's important and it's okay. You know what I mean? Because what else would you have done? Like,
you have to start somewhere.
You have to start somewhere. Yeah. And probably YouTube can be a little daunting. At least you have a hub. You know, bodybuilding.com has everything there.
I think the nice thing about bodybuilding.com, and I haven't been on it in years, but at the time, what was really good about it was a pretty comprehensive library.
Totally. Right.
So it's like, you know, if you wanted to work on your shoulders, we'd show you all the different shoulder exercises or whatever. And I feel like now, and you know, like, it was pretty cut and dry because it was like, this is how you do this lift.
Yeah.
And now it's like, if you watch a YouTube video, there's like 30 minutes of explanation.
Yeah.
And then it's like,
the demo.
And then it's executed incorrectly to make it work.
Yeah.
And then you have like all these people commenting on these videos, like, oh, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah,
like,
everybody's a fucking expert.
Yeah. You know, it was, I feel like information was so much easier for us to get through.
Yeah.
You know, like 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, I agree.
When all these platforms weren't so prevalent, you know.
Well, you know, it's funny, bodybuilding.com, I heard, is like making its downturn. Like, it's
Which is sad.
It is, you know, because there was supplement line and there were that, but I think the industry has kind of made a change, and I don't know if they've pivoted the same way, you know. But I think I've heard it's been sad.
Yeah, I think a lot of these companies just have like a really hard time trying to stay within the market.
Yeah,
you know, competition within the market is super different from what it was. Yeah. Even the marketing to that is completely different.
So you get all these videos. So you're watching them. You create a profile. I know Sin Liang. You got your little profile going on with your photos, your befores and afters.
And yeah, you know, honestly, like I'm a really curious person by nature. Even, you know, like everything that I know in my career, I'm entirely self-taught. Everything that I knew about lifting at that time was completely self-taught. So yeah. I just read everything that I could get my hands on.
That's awesome.
And just experimented a lot to figure out like what works, what doesn't work. You know, obviously, if this thing hurts, don't keep doing the thing, you know.
So you started off with like basic weight training or strength training program, some sort of bodybuilding maybe-ish kind of thing.
You know, I did the bro split. You did the bro split.
Yeah, 5-day split, whatever. Oh my gosh, isn't that funny? Like how everybody starts on a split, and I would never recommend a beginner to ever start on a split.
Right.
Ever. Like, and this is for everybody who's listening. It's just not, you're talking about 5 days a week from somebody who probably never worked out. And then you're having them do their body part once a week, maybe one other part a week, but that's not what's going to elicit the best change right away. And they probably don't know enough. So they shouldn't be doing a body part split, you know? It's like,
right. But to that point, I do think that it's the best way to learn.
Right. Because you're going to learn.
Your own.
Yeah. Yeah. I do agree. Because then you're going to learn a lot of different exercises.
Right.
I mean, how many bicep things I did at one time? I think I had like 7 bicep exercises.
Oh my God.
Can I lay down?
So many bicep exercises. Like the preacher curl, and then you can do like the cable thing, and you can do the cable thing lying down.
You can do it on an incline. So many different ways. Let's make sure we hit every muscle fiber and make
those
biceps.
All the different heads.
Yeah. It's so stupid. Like, just do a bicep curl.
Right. Just do the one thing correctly. So I reached out to my brother afterwards and I was like, Bun, my brother's name is Bun.
Okay.
Don't ask for Chinese. I won the name lottery. So, I said, Bun, I was like, everything's getting kind of light. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And my brother's like, lift heavier shit. And I was like, oh, okay.
Okay, duh.
Yeah. So like, I just started lifting. So instead of doing like reps of like 30 or whatever arbitrary number it was, I was like, we could do like 3. We could do like 3 heavy things and then we can just like back off, you know? And like, so that was how I got to that. And, you know, time went on and I just kind of got like weirdly strong because I guess we're just genetically predisposed to it. And my sibling, I just moved back to New York. Like my ex-husband had gotten out of the Navy and my brother was like, oh, like, why don't you compete in powerlifting? At the time, my ex was like super against it.
Mm.
And, you know, when we parted ways, you know, honestly, he said something that I didn't appreciate, and I still carry with myself years later. He had said, you know what, Sin, it's not that I find you less attractive. I just find you less feminine.
Mm. Interesting.
And at the time, I was like, I was really toying around with the idea of stepping on stage. I was a much smaller girl.
Right,
I was maybe about 115 pounds. So I kind of, I was toying around with the idea of doing a figure show. Or I really was toying around with the idea of doing a meet.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my ex-husband split up and I was like, I'm getting on stage or a platform, whichever fucking comes first.
Yep.
I don't care.
Isn't that funny?
And my brother was already competing at the time. So my brother was 148. He was phenomenal. He was like a three something bencher at 148.
Wow.
And, he's like, oh, let's do this meet. And I was like, eh. And then he's like, oh, let's do this meet. I was like, okay. So I did my first meet. I was horrible. I had like blown out my adductor the week of and decided to try to do it anyway. It
oh my terrible. Gosh, shut up.
I did. It was a terrible idea.
How did you blow it out? Squatting?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a warm up. It's always a warm up.
Fuck.
It's never anything serious. Always a warm whatever.
Yes.
So I had blown out my adductor and ostensibly had bombed out my first meet. And the meet director was like, I know this is like your first time at this, like we're just gonna let you finish this like push pull and move on. And it was really funny because it was like, I don't even remember what I did. I think I missed like 140
I missed, like,
140 pounds on the bench, and I think I pulled like 250 or 200, something stupid and arbitrary.
Yeah. But you finished it.
I finished it. Not a quitter.
Not a quitter.
But yeah, that's kind of my story.
Yeah.
Long-winded version.
So you continued to do some powerlifting, and how did it get to you training? Because Swede was he your first powerlifting coach?
No, I had a coach that I'd met through a connection of mine, and we worked together for about, I want to say, a year, year and a half.
Is this in person?
Yeah, this was in person. And, you know, I honestly, I don't think I really handled that departure as well as I could have or should have in retrospect. I was much younger. Mm-hmm. I was in a very different place in my life. And I just honestly, mentally, just wasn't all there. But, you know, he kind of taught me the basics. And then after our departure, I decided I really wanted to try to learn how to program on my own.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, doing the things that I do them, I just kind of read everything that I could get my hands on, very candid discussions with a lot of different people, and kind of cobbled together a program that worked. It was just a very high maintenance program.
Why is that?
It involved like a combination of like RPE, pull weapons chart, and a couple of other things. So it was intuitive in nature, but the thing that I really needed was boundaries. And that's the thing with me. And the ongoing theme of my life is boundaries.
Mm.
So at the time, I was going through a number of transitions. I forget what was going on. I think I was dating somebody who had gotten hurt or something. I was transitioning into a new job, a new industry.
Mm.
And I was working three jobs. I've honestly worked like three jobs for the last like 7 years.
Wow.
And I was super overwhelmed. And me and Sweet, who, by the way, we also kind of met on Instagram. Like, we had met in real life.
See,
in like at like from seven, Raw Unity 7, I think it was, or okay. 6 or something like that. And we had met in real life, but then we re-met on Instagram. And we had became really good friends. And I was like, I'm honestly just really struggling. And I was super fortunate because at the time, I guess he wasn't, you know, he wasn't as busy with with clients, like the backlog of clients as he was today.
Yeah.
And I was like, could you help me through a training cycle? You know, and he was like, yeah, absolutely. So we did that first training cycle. And then it's like, what, 3-4 years later, here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think what's amazing is I didn't really know this, but he pretty much attributes a lot of his success to trying things out on you. And you, you know what I mean? Like, if for those of you listening, we're talking about Swede Burns. And by this time, he's actually going to be on a podcast right before you with Ellen Stein. So, but he attributes a lot of that to being with, you know, like that you were his guinea pig, that he did a lot of, you know, that's discovery maybe on with you, and that you were very supportive of him writing the book and actually being a part of the graphic design, and which if you guys haven't seen it, send in all the graphics and it looks fucking amazing. But I think that's interesting. So did you actually start like a fifth set program back then, or was it not fifth set yet? Or
I don't recall. Honestly, I can't recall correctly if it was called fifth set. I think it might have been.
Probably but like some sort of like version of it too.
Yeah, something like that. And before we get too far away from this topic, I actually didn't do all the graphic work for it. Jen Iron did.
Oh, okay.
I did all the book work for it. So I did all the formatting to convert it into ebook and paperback. And also to that note, I'm working on Evolutions right now. So that should be dropping pretty soon.
And what is that?
And I also did the book work for Clues About Ghosts. For
Oh,
Sweet,
you
so.
Did. I love that. So it's another book that Sweet has. It's a poem book.
Yeah, the poem book. You know, really well received. And I don't know if you've read it, but it's heart-wrenching in some places. And
I haven't ordered it yet. I've been meaning to order it. I mean, it has like 5 stars, tons of reviews. I mean,
yeah.
It has been well received.
Yeah. You should get a hold of it though, because it's super poignant, and I think it gives you, I feel like, you know, in a lot of ways, like when you meet people or get to know people, quote unquote, via the interwebs.
Yeah.
It's very one-dimensional.
Yeah.
super one dimensional.
Yeah.
And that's not real people. You know what I mean? Like, that's not the truth of who somebody really is.
Yeah.
So I think it's super interesting to get to see a whole nother side of him.
Yeah. And he's complex like that. I think that's what it is too, is that he's not, I mean, I think that's probably why you two are friends too, because you're complex, you know, there's more to you than powerlifting, or like you said, like what people see on Instagram, you know what I mean? We only see that part, but you don't really get to get peek into the kind of person they are, their personality, their likes and other things like that, or how deep they can be.
And I think, you know, honestly, like there's that piece, and there's also, you know, it's social media. Like, you can't really take that shit seriously. It's literally like watching a highlight reel of someone's life, you know, and even like, and everything is so heavily curated, even the ugly parts, you know, people will be like, oh, quote unquote, like, you know, I don't just want to show all the good stuff. Like, here's me failing a lift. And it's like, all right, cool. Well, what if I told you that I literally tried to squat over 300 pounds 8 different fucking times before I finally got it.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, and you see one out of those 8 attempts. You didn't see the fact that, like, the first time I did it, like, I basically tried to good morning it, cried my fucking eyes out, felt super embarrassed because I felt like I let all these people down. You know what I mean? Like, it's so heavily curated that it's not real. And, you know, the problem is when people start to believe their own bullshit. You know what I mean? And then you meet them in your real life and you're like, holy shit, like, you're so not like what you portray yourself
as. Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Oh, but we totally got off topic.
Yes.
So, but yeah, you know, like, when he had done that training cycle, it honestly changed my life because I was super strung out at the time. Like, I was not strong. I was super stressed out and everything was crazy. Like, I was working all these hours and trying to make all this stuff happen. And, you know, he gave me boundaries, which I need in order to progress as like a person. Like, you know, fuck the lifts, you know, like this is training isn't about the lifts. You know, like the reason you fall in love with training isn't because you like to lift heavy weights necessarily. It's because, you know, you fall in love with the process and it makes you into a better human being, because if you progress doing that, you can pretty much progress doing anything.
Yep, that's so true. You know,
and those principles kind of transfer. So when we got through that training cycle, we did our first meet, I think like July, 6 months later. And I'd said to him, I was like, you know, you really need to put this book out. And he was like, eh. And I was like, no, like you really, really need to. Like you really need to, because I think that, you know, other people would super benefit from it. And then you don't have to keep explaining yourself all the time. You know what I mean?
Like, which he still does. People ask the same stinking questions on the street.
Yeah. Explaining himself.
Every time I listen to his story, I swear, and I wrote one time, I was like, I don't know if they're trying to troll you, but I swear the answer is in the book, and it's so basic. Like, but you can tell that they know that the question eludes that they know the book.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, why don't you just look back in the book? You know, it's like very easy.
Yep. And, you know, honestly, it's funny because we have a group. We have a group on Facebook. And every so often, somebody will ask a question and somebody else will just reference the page number it's on.
Yeah.
It's like, if you have the book, you have to go to this page number to find the answer because we're not just going to give it to you because we don't believe. You know what I mean? It's like,
I think
stop trying to take food out of other people's mouths. Stop trying to take money away from people.
Yeah.
Support the cause. You know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I bought the ebook. I was like, no, because then I can read it in bed and all that. I'm like, I should have bought the regular book, because now I realized that it just, even though I like having an ebook, it's not the same when I want to take it to the gym or when I have time to just chill out. And just something about a book, now I realize, like, it just, when it, especially for training, I think it's because I'm always referring back. Like, I want to look, all right, let me, you know, put something here. This is where I have this page. Or I can't do that with an ebook. I was like, afterwards, I was like, man, I think I've only bought one other ebook that was a training book, and it was, I think it was Louis Simmons' methodology, one of his methodology ones. And I'm like, that I'm not really like paging. I don't know. I guess because I really wanted to try PhysEd, and there was just more to it. But yeah, I definitely agree. Like, there needs to be more of people buying the book too, instead of passing it around. Unfortunately, that does happen.
Yeah. I think it's just, you know, it's one of those things where I feel like people are like, oh, you know, there's a book and I have it and I can lend it to somebody else. And it's like, yeah, but also, you know, have a little respect for the person that's behind it and the amount of effort that went into that and the amount of data that went into it. You know, like, you're talking about a methodology that's been in the works for, like, I don't even know, over a decade, maybe a decade, something like that. Whatever it is, it's longer than most of these kids have been training.
Yeah.
So it's like, yo, have a little respect for your, you know, for your colleagues and peers, you know.
So when so you started this, so method, you know, the fifth, well, this program cycle changed everything for you. So
it did.
Because these boundaries were set. So what kind of boundaries were there? Like, don't be a workaholic?
No, you know what it was? I was, I hate to use the word overtraining because that's not true. I was spending a lot of time training in the gym, and it was an efficiency problem,
right?
So like the good thing about the set, and I think the difference that a lot of people don't realize is, yes, you know, everyone's always like volume, volume, and nobody really thinks about what that actually means, right? Mm-hmm. Like how well your training is going is not attributed to how long you're in there.
Yeah.
That's just a bunch of bullshit.
That you know, should like, be like the quote of the day.
Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? And the quality, and to that point, the quality of your work under the bar is also not attributed to like the, I would say, honestly, in many ways, the frequency that you're doing this or like the amount that you're doing this. It's all about efficiency, right? Mm-hmm. Like when people are like, oh yeah, like I like doing all this volume. And then it's like, well, that's cool, but do you know what you're doing and do you know why?
Yeah.
And for me, understanding the why of everything is like such a core part of my DNA. And I this might be because of what I do for a living, but I always need to know why. And for me, like being able to scale back the amount of time that I was spending in the gym opened up more time for me to have like mental space. Because for me, it was never a physical issue. It wasn't like I was breaking down because I was spending all this time in the gym. It was I couldn't get enough mental space to be able to do what I was doing in the other parts of my life efficiently.
Right.
So for me, the boundaries there was, here's your structured program. This is what you're doing. Here's the plan. Just follow the fucking plan. You're good to go.
As he likes to say, stick to the script, right?
No, seriously. It really is what it is, right? Like, as long as you stick to the plan, everything's fine.
So do you think that
the reality is nobody picks up a barbell or weight to get weaker. Like that's not a thing.
Right. Right. So do you think that you were in the gym more for other reasons other than getting, you know, better at your craft? Do you think that you were maybe subconsciously there to sort of cope with maybe what was going on or not have to be present in what was going on personally? I feel like I've had that where I've sort of dove into whether it was work or the gym, and I unknowingly took a little longer. do you think that might have been something for you?
Yeah, you know, I was again in a very different place in my life. You know, I feel like my life kind of progresses in 3-year blocks. So every 3 to 5 years, you know, like I'm a totally different version.
Yeah,
of myself,
I feel like I in the time frame. I feel that's happened already in our friendship.
Right.
It's great.
But at the time, you know, I was in a fairly, I hesitate to use the word toxic, but I was in a fairly non-beneficial relationship where it was very kind of one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the time, like we were training together, and I think that I was in one sense, I was using my time in the gym to work out, to try to like alleviate some of the stress that was going on at my work, mm-hmm. which is kind of counterproductive.
Right.
And I can get into that later if you'd like.
For sure.
And at the same time, I think I was also using it as a mechanism to like, quote unquote, spend time together, which is funny because even though we were training together, we would do two totally different things. Mm-hmm. And not to like, you know, take a massive shit on my ex-boyfriend or my previous relationship or anything like that. I just think that we were two people that really had no business being together, and we tried to make it work, and it was just not a good situation. And I think on top of that, the gym has always been, at least as far as I've been lifting, training, whatever you want to call it, it became such a core part of my identity, my DNA. And I was having kind of an identity crisis, you know, like, you know, when you're in your 20s, you don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
You think you have it figured out. Yeah. You don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And you think that like, quote unquote, being a power lifter is like such a big deal. And then you kind of grow up and you realize that it's just a part of you.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be all of you.
Right.
So I think I was just struggling with a couple of things. It was just a phase that I was going through.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I literally met Sweet at like the most perfect time in my life.
That's great.
And I genuinely believe, you know, I don't subscribe to like organized religion, but I do believe that, and at least for my, in my experience in my life, the universe has always provided me exactly what I needed when I needed it. Nothing more, nothing less.
Right.
And it was my responsibility to either step up, rise to the occasion and actually listen, or like, you know, the same shitty thing would keep happening to me until I figured it out.
Right. Well, I think that takes a lot of growth on your part and openness to see that as an opportunity, you know, and just kind of take it and run with it.
It's funny because like, so I think it was like a few weeks ago or a few months ago, my current relationship partner had gotten me this small knickknack plaque type thing that sits on my desk at work. And it actually says vision to see obstacles as opportunities.
Yes.
And that's become like the ongoing theme, I think, of like this new transitionary period of my life. So
that's, and I think that I've sort of, it's interesting that you talk about that, because I think that just recently I've been probably surrounding myself with more of that, that thought process, you know, like the book that just came out, The Obstacle is the Way, and that it, the book is based off of the stoicism that is in line with people like Marcus Aurelius, meaning right. that you know, you don't crush under pressure, you don't show emotion. There's parts of it where you take obstacles head on, because the obstacle is what leads you to the opening or the opportunity or the better life or things like that. And, but the obstacle is the hard thing to do, right? It's the challenge of it is the difficulty. But I think taking on, I mean, powerlifting to me, in my opinion, for women especially, is already taking a little bit of a stand, because you're going against the grain for the most part. It's a small community of people who are doing things that might be quote unquote unfeminine.
Right.
So you're already kind of taking a stand on that, which is interesting.
I think one of the great things about women and female powerlifting in general is like, I don't know if you remember this, but I definitely do. When I started out, and this was only like, what, 6-7 years ago, there was like locally, there were like two girls there, me and somebody else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sure. And it's grown so tremendously. And I'm sure much of it, again, I'll probably get shit for this, but like much of it, thanks to CrossFit, exposing so many women to barbells, fantastic. Yeah. I don't really give a shit how you found us.
Yeah.
I'm just so glad you're here.
Yeah. You know I see the same thing. And I, you know, people, I feel like maybe more people are seeing the light of that, but it's true. I mean, CrossFit did bring the barbells to the masses. And I've talked about this in other podcasts. Like when I used to go to the gym in like the early 2000s, late 1990s or whatever, there was no fucking free bar. There was all machines. People were doing like pickle and whatever it is inside, you know, like the 24 right. hour places. Like that was the norm. Nobody was right. doing any kind of, and especially women. My first meet, right. I was the only one. I mean, I'm trying to think if there was another woman. I don't think there was. I'm
Ellen.
Pretty sure I was. Yeah. She was probably my mother's only person in her meet. That's how fucking old Ellen is. I love that. She's so funny. She cracks me up. You should have heard the podcast. So you're going to hear it by when it comes out, but they're like a bickering couple. I'm sure that's all you. I'm like, are you? It's like a father and like a son and a mother. It's like they're just bickering, but it made me laugh. But yeah, no, it's so true. And I do think, you know, CrossFit, which is great, has brought the barbell to the masses, and it makes it more popular. And I think this whole movement with women empowering themselves too, that might be an avenue for them to find that empowerment is through the weights.
Well, I think that, you know, like we had mentioned before, like weight training, strength training. And I think strength training is just such a great conduit to that type of empowerment, because,
totally.
You know, when you stop giving a shit what your body looks like, because you focus on what it can do,
yes.
your entire mind changes, because it reframes confidence, identity, and self-belief in such a powerful way.
Yes.
You know, you stop looking at, you know, and you kind of transfer that mindset into your work. You know, you stop looking at, you know, people for, like, I work in a male-dominated industry.
Right.
I work in technology, super male-dominated industry. And, you know, you'll find yourself in meetings or in rooms where you're the only woman there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have ideas, or you're trying to make your voice heard. And, you know, like, it's super difficult, because whether consciously or not, people are speaking over you, people are cutting you off.
Yeah.
And then you get to the point where you're just like, yo, can I finish a sentence
yeah.
at any point in time today?
Yeah. It's interesting. I never thought about it. Yeah. You're a minority in a minority in a minority. When you're talking about your job, you know, the industry that you're in, your ethnic background, you know, it's even your stature. You're not a big person either, you know, so that oftentimes I feel being small too, you know, you're looked at as, you know, like if I was a couple inches taller, I feel like some people might take like approach me a little differently. So I always wear heels at work because I feel like if I go flat, the first thing people say is like, oh my gosh, you're so short. Like, oh, really? I didn't fucking notice that. That was 38 right? yeah, years. Like,
I didn't
like,
have to live with that.
Yeah. Like it's one of those things where I've learned to shake off. But when they say something like that, it triggers to me right away. Like, oh, you're cute. You know, like that's the kind of the right. package that is put together with you. Right. And that is the what they look at right away, you know? So it's interesting. So it's, you're a minority in a minority in a minority.
Yeah. But you know, at the same time, I try, like, as much as I know it's true,
mm-hmm.
In this, like this latter phase of my life, I've definitely worked really, really hard on focusing on the fact that I'm a human
yes.
and I'm a person.
Wonderful. First. I think
like,
so.
Like fuck the way my eyes look, fuck the way my skin is, you know, fuck how short I am. Whether or not I have tits, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it's not, that's not the central issue here.
Yeah.
And how I got here is not relevant.
Yeah.
Like, what matters is I am fucking here today. I earn my seat at this table. And one of two things is going to happen. Either you're going to fucking hear me out or I'm going to walk away from the table.
Yeah.
Either way is fine with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I think that's important though, because once we start allowing those things like, well, it's because I'm Asian or it's because I'm a woman, then you no longer are taking control of the situation or,
right.
or your quote unquote destiny. You know what I mean? You're just allowing that to be an excuse that you can latch onto. And I think that that's a cop out, you know,
right.
it's going to be a lot harder. It's going to be more challenging to think the other way. But that, to me, that's the right way of doing it.
Like, I totally believe that. Yes. You know what? Like there is inherent bias. Racism really is a thing. I've experienced it.
Yeah.
And sexism is definitely a thing. And but you know what? At the end of the day, it's like, yo, this is life.
Yeah.
Two options. Keep moving or don't.
Yeah.
You know, everything in your life is just decisions and choices. And if you make a choice and it's not the right choice, you can just make another choice and that's okay.
Yeah.
But the minute that we stop owning that we have the ability and the authority on, and to some extent the audacity to make that decision is when you're giving up what little control you have.
Yeah.
To some like whatever external force that isn't
right.
even real. It's really just because, you know, what if none of that shit matters? What if you just succeed? You know
yeah.
what I mean? I think more people are afraid of being successful than they are failing.
Yeah.
Because if you succeed, then you have no fucking excuses.
Yeah.
You know, you systematically remove all these weird, I don't know if you've read David Goggins wrote a book or his
Can't
book just dropped.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah,
dude,
so
I just finished reading
about,
it.
Yeah, he talks about the governor in your mind, right?
Yep.
And it's a very valid point, right? Like
totally.
Once you start removing the bullshit things that people have told you or that you've told yourself,
yep.
you get so much further in life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
Yeah,
you know,
I think you said it right. Like allowing these external arbitrary things like words, you know, like
they're
for
not
him.
Real.
Yeah. I mean, for him, it was a lot of racism. He had a lot of things going on. And he's like, harden your mind. And I think
right.
that's an important thing is like, if we weaken and subject ourselves to too much, I mean, of course, there's a line, right? But if you allow that power to go in that direction too much, then you do. You let go of all that and you'll never progress.
Yeah, because you're just, you're basically trying to let go. You're literally trying to absolve yourself of any responsibility
yes.
that you have.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like if you succeed, it's just because, oh, it was lucky
yeah.
and it so happened to work that way. But if you failed, it's because of everybody else.
Yeah.
So like the highs aren't so high and the lows aren't so lows.
Yeah.
And that's what you're settling for.
Yeah.
Rather than being like, yo, you know what? Like, I saw this. This was fucked up, but I wanted it. So I did whatever it fucking took.
Yeah.
And I can be proud of that and own it. You know, and I failed and I fell and I scraped my knees and I broke some stuff and some shit didn't work out. You know, like it's really fucking hard, I think, if you're not a person that inherently likes to fight.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. to be able to sit there and try to do these things because it's scary.
Yeah.
You know, but I think at the end of the day, at least in my experience and honestly what my relationship partner has taught me as of late is vulnerability is real strength.
Yeah.
And when you open yourself up and you open, you know, your heart, you open your life up to being vulnerable, you'll find that everything that you really needed to be successful and to not give a fuck and to tell people to fuck off is been in you all along.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's, I'm reading a book right now called Dare to Lead by Brene Brown. And she's,
great book.
Huh? Yes. Great book. Oh my gosh. I'm loving it. And you know, where she's actually just touching on that. And it's interesting, the vulnerability part. I don't think that I ever struggled with the vulnerability in a relationship, even though my relationship has been, you know, in the past has been very difficult, you know, a bad divorce. I think that I found that I struggle with things like telling somebody they need to fix something when we're really close, or I have to not necessarily reprimand them, but be like, you know, you didn't do this right. And, or I have to take that conversation over and over again. Like I might be able to do it the first or second time, but then once it becomes really difficult, that I find that that is where not necessarily I'm vulnerable, but I have this fear in being that person, you know? So it's interesting. I'm kind of unpacking that part of myself and where I can lead, because I have no problem telling somebody what's up if it's like confrontational, like,
right.
You know, if I can be that right onto that side and be that person where I'm like, no, this is not going to fucking happen. Like
right.
that part is no problem where I can be that. And I can be reserved and enough where I can do it professional. But when it comes to somebody who's like nice and a friend and a coworker, and I'm like, hey, you know, you really didn't do this right. You were supposed to send it to me a week, you know, whatever. Those kind of conversations are a little more difficult for me, which is
interesting.
You know
what though? I think for a lot of people, and we talked about this really, really briefly earlier on, is boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about boundaries. It's all about your own boundaries, respecting other people's boundaries. And I think that, you know, at least maybe you seem like a fighter too. At the end of the day, it's like, you know, it's really easy to go black and white,
yeah.
yes or no.
Yes,
go,
it
no,
is.
Go.
Yep.
You know, but mm-hmm. the stuff in between where it's like you're negotiating,
yeah,
that is challenging.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to what are your boundaries? And how do you enforce them? Because I firmly believe that you teach other people how to treat you.
Yeah, that is so true.
And I think for the most part, and at least in my experience, getting to know other people has always taught me a lot about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, reinforcing those, like starting those boundaries early on, like, hey, this isn't cool, and this is why, or being like, hey, like I expected this. You know, a lot of these boundary issues are communication issues,
yeah.
are mismanaged expectations,
mm-hmm.
and not being on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're working with somebody who's willing to work with you, whether that's, you know, a coworker, a friend, a colleague, a boyfriend, sister, husband, whatever, if you're with somebody that wants to work with you and get through it, you have to trust them.
Yeah.
You know, you have to trust them that they want to work with you through it.
Yeah.
And that's what makes those conversations okay, because they can never learn if you don't teach them.
Yeah. That's so true. And you know, it makes me think of a part in the book that I thought was very important on communication, but it's called Paint Done. Do you remember that part? I'm not sure if you, so for example, we're having a conversation like, hey, I need, I'm asking you to do something for me. Like, hey, I need you to just rewrite my program for the first week, and you just say, all right, so you just rewrite it, and then when you get it back, I'm like, no dude, I want it to work out 3 days a week, not four, and I told you I can't squat box squat because it hurts my hips. And I'm like, well, how the fuck was I supposed to know that, right? So
right.
The conversation and the key word, the two words that she constantly uses is, all right, so that same, we revisit that and say, hey, I need you to rewrite my first week of my program there. All right, well, paint done for me. What does done look like? What is
right.
What is that first week? And so that verbiage goes back and forth. Oh, well, it would be 3 day week program instead of a four. All right. What are there anything, you know, that, you know, so it continues on. It's almost like the why is why, you know, asking why
right.
and why. But I think that those things are managing expectations, right? You're not going to expect the person to know all the shit that you don't know. But having something that is a clear word or something you can use every
right.
time you're demanding somebody or communicating with somebody that can help to manage those expectations, clear communication, and hopefully have the result you want in the end, right? Instead of people all pissed off.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think part of that thinking might also be, again, a byproduct of, like, what I do for a living.
Right, totally.
Yeah, so...
Because of your position. I mean, what you have to do and how you have to do that.
Yeah, so I guess for your listeners that don't have a background, I'm a product designer and I work in technology. I'm also the director of design for Chaos and Pain, and I do rotate about 3 to 5 clients on the side.
And Chaos and Pain is a supplement company.
Yes. And so that's my work stuff, and then there's the Fit Set stuff, and then there's the boyfriend and friends.
So let me ask you, how do you manage it all? What are some things that maybe our listeners can walk away from for somebody who I feel like you and I have a lot of similarities? Like, we're just ambitious, you know, in different ways. And I think that part, it probably fuels us in a way internally. And I think that there's a lot of people like that. And how do we manage all of that?
I think two pieces. There's two very critical things. The first thing is three pieces. The first thing is you don't have to be perfect and you don't have to get everything right. Because, you know, at the end of the day, done is better than perfect.
Yes.
Right. The second thing is you always want to put the oxygen mask on yourself first. You put the life vest on yourself first.
Yes, that's a great analogy, dude.
Like, if you cannot fucking save yourself, you are not taking care of yourself. Like, you're completely fucked. Everything goes by the wayside.
Yes.
So those are the two tenets. And the third tenet is have your goals and your priorities in line and know without a shadow of a doubt. Honestly, I fifth set everything, including my life goals, but I look at everything in terms of training blocks. So, you know, 3 mesocycles runs roughly 6 months long.
Mm-hmm.
So everything for me, my goals break down to what do I want to accomplish in the next 6 to 9 months?
And then I'll backwards plan. I like that.
And I'll backwards plan.
Yeah.
I'll go, okay, well, you know, let's say, you know, you want to finish this big project, mm-hmm. whatever it is. I'm trying to think okay. So let's say your goal is to, for instance, buy like a laptop or whatever in the next like 6 months and you don't have the money right now. So, okay. So what paint done, right? So what does that look like? What does that cost? What are the requirements?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what are the pieces involved? So you take that and you break it down and you go, all right, so I need this much amount of money. I need it to have these kinds of specs. I need the numbers to make sense, right? In this instance. Okay, cool. So then you look at what those are and then you break those down again and you go, all right, so what do I need to do in order to get there? And once you have those pieces figured out, you go, all right, cool, bet. Break that down again and you go, all right, what are the habits that I need to develop in order to get this thing done in order to be able to accomplish this goal?
Yeah.
And it sounds militant and it sounds kind of extra and OD, but I think at the end of the day, being able to do things like this comes down to having discipline, and discipline is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And if you fucking train, then I would assume that you have some sort of discipline somewhere, assuming you're not a person that like, oh, I feel like maxing out today because I had a bad day. Like, if you're a person that can follow basic instructions, you have some semblance of discipline.
Yeah.
Right? So then you can backwards plan and you can plan. And the thing is, people are like, oh, well, you know, like, I don't know how to stick to that. And it's like, well, you know, 80-20 rule. Stick to it 80% of the time. You have maybe an 80% chance of accomplishing whatever it is that you want to do.
Yeah.
So do you 100% want to accomplish it, or do you 80% want to accomplish it? Right? Like, you have to make up your mind. And I think that as long as you're willing to commit to some shit, like, that's the way to do it. So getting back to your actual question, how do I manage? I manage it because I don't waste my time doing shit I don't want to do. So, like, I don't go to karaoke. I don't go bowling. I don't go ice skating. Well, not ice skating. I don't go bowling. I don't go karaoke because I don't like karaoke and I don't like bowling.
Yeah. So
So I don't
random.
feel
I
it.
was like, why bowling and why karaoke?
It's literally like the two things that I've been asked to do like over the last like 2 weeks.
I guess so. That's like I could see that.
But like you think about it, right? Like if you're out at karaoke or you're out at bowling, that's like what, 2 hours, 3 hours,
Yeah.
4 hours right there.
Right.
For me, it's always about having my priorities. So I have fixed pieces. I have, all right, well, I have to be at work or be doing work for this many hours a day, and this is over the course of a week.
Right.
And then I think about, all right, training takes up these 3 days, which means these 3 nights are completely off the table. I have a weird thing where I don't sleep a whole lot, and I'm really fortunate, but then I think about, all right, well, how much sleep do I need? And then I take that away. And then everything else that I have left over, I just divvy up.
Yeah.
And it sounds really psychotic, but if, you know, a really easy way to do this is to spend a week tracking everything that you do down to the quarter hour, and then look at it, really look at it, and be really fucking honest and really specific, and look at where your time is going.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that different from, I would say, you know, when you're trying to get your diet in order.
Right. I was just thinking the same thing.
Take a look at it. Where is your fucking time going, and where do you not want it to go, and where can it be better suited?
Yeah.
And I think the other piece that people don't think about is before you start adding arbitrary bullshit to your schedule, you have to schedule time for yourself.
Yeah. 100%.
Training, you know, there's work, there's training, there's my time, there's time for my partner, and then everything else.
Yeah.
And if I can get to it, I can get to it. If I can't get to it, fine, fuck it.
Yeah. You know, and I it's interesting you say that because I was counting like the times that I'm on my phone, you know, just even on my lunch break, where now, you know, I think David Goggins' book kind of motivated me a little bit. Normally that kind of stuff doesn't, but his story is so compelling, that I really took a hard look at where I could improve as a person. You know, I know that I have these goals for myself, right? I want to be able to read so many books because those books help bring knowledge to me and enrich my life. Okay, but well, I'm not really, I read at night and I read like 3 pages and I want to sleep. So I need to get that somewhere else. So now I do audiobooks. I do a lot of audiobooks that help me. But I looked at how much I was dicking around when I got home. Like I would be upset when I wake up and I'm like, oh, the house is still like messy. I feel like it's always messy. And it's hard when you have 3 kids, you know? But I timed it exactly what you said. I said, look at my watch. I said, all right, I got 30 minutes. I'm gonna give these 30 minutes to cleaning everything I possibly can. And I make it like a challenge. So I am like taking all the clothes and run things, everything. I mean, clean up the table, and in 30 minutes, I want to see how much I can get done. And it's amazing that I do that all the time, and it's just time blocked. Boom, 30 minutes. Now I got to start dinner. Boom, I got 15 minutes to get it going. Boom, and everything is like a time for me now. So I'm like, all right, Devin's gonna be home in, you know, 45 minutes. Let's make sure the kids, you know. So then Devin and I have our time. So when the kids come home, they're already, you know, whatever, and then he and I can sit down and eat, you know. But having that discipline, just saying, fuck it, just do it, versus sitting down and scrolling through my phone or going on my computer or, you know, little things where now I've structured it so I don't feel overwhelmed, you know, that the discipline is giving me more freedom, you know, and I think that that's a weird thing to even think. How does discipline or creating habits create more freedom? Well, it's because you're not wasting time. And that's definitely one thing that I've learn to, well, I'm learning, I'm always learning, I think, to just be more efficient with my time, just like in the gym, which I'm not efficient. Like now that's probably my biggest struggle is like I'm not efficient with my break times. It's gotten worse over the years since I've owned the gym. Like it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, I could clean the wall, or, you know, I find myself doing things to the gym where I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? Let me just get my shit done and then I can do all this after, you know?
Honestly, the other thing that I've also figured out over the years too is like, so I've been spending the last, I would say maybe 4 years, slowly moving FitSet as a training methodology into a life methodology.
Oh, I like it.
So I actually also deload work, deload emotional
Interesting.
shit, deload like my time structure. So there'll be
Nice.
like maybe like 1 week out of every like 5 or 6 where I just kind of back off of everything just so I have a little bit of room to breathe, get my mental bearings straight, and then, you know, I can get after it right after that. So
it's interesting. I would have never thought. I think of that as like maybe I do it on a weekly. Like Sundays are usually those times where I kind of like just let shit kind of slide. And then yeah. Sunday night is when I'm like, all right, let me just get everything prepared, cleaned up. And but yeah, I'm not so diligent on trying to pick up little things. There's always toys on the floor. Let me tell you, there's always toys. And we got a new dog, right? I told you we got a little pit. Oh my God, so
no,
cute.
No, you didn't tell me that.
Oh, he's so oh my cute. God. He's I'm so dead. Fucking cute. But he eats everything. And then he pees. So it's like, he's still learning, you know, he's the sweetest little dog. But yeah, he tore up all kind of things. And so I'm always picking up foam and pieces of like stuffing all over the floor. And so those are times when I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to let it like swim around the floor. I'm just going to go sit on the couch and drink my coffee and have a little fuck waffle it. That my kid made, you know?
Right. Fuck it.
Yeah.
It's not that important. You know, if honestly, at this point in my life, if it's not important and urgent, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Things that are like important but not urgent, I'm not dealing with that.
Yeah.
The only things that I'm dealing with, first and foremost, are the things that are both important and urgent.
Yeah. Right. That block, that's, right? We're talking about that.
Yep.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. We're looking at this. That's why we're friends. Well, Sin, this has been fantastic, and it went exactly where I was hoping it would go. You know, our conversations, I think, are always meaningful and a little deeper than the superficial shit, and I like that we could talk about something that I think the listeners will have a takeaway from. I will have all your handles and everything in there, and you got to watch, Sin. This bitch is strong. She is so stinking strong. It makes me want to puke in my mouth, and your squat is like, I realize it. I'm like, you just have a great squat. Like, your legs, the way it's just, I don't know what it is. When I watch your squat, it's just so efficient.
I've rebuilt that thing like so many times. It's still not even where I want it to be, but I've definitely torn down and rebuilt that squat at least 6 times. So
I'm still in the process. Like, I think I've struggled with this hip thing off and on for the last 4 years. So I change it, and then I, you know, it is what it is. Well, hopefully yeah. When Sweet comes down, and you know, there might be some things he could, you know, cue me on, and who knows? I think it's just, I need to work on my own anatomy a little bit. My
mobility. You'll be great though. I mean, it's, you know, once you figure that out, once you can kind of figure out how to get past it, around it, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Maybe I can have a 300-pound squat and be next to your warm-up weight.
Oh my God. Don't even start. I'm strong. I'm not that strong. Like, it's cool.
Whatever. Yeah. You were doing like, I think you just did like 330 for a double or something, right?
I don't know.
It was probably more. It was probably 360, and I just was looking at it wrong. I don't know. You're just very strong. What's your total right now?
I went 1,005 in April, last April. So.
And that was the meet in New York?
No, that was RPS meet. It was actually the inaugural Fifth Set Black meet, which unfortunately I won't make this year.
Oh, I was kind of thinking of going. I'm competing in one out here the week after, so I wouldn't. I didn't know about his until recently, and I had already signed up for the one out here.
It's a great meet.
I heard.
If you ever get a chance to do it, it's a great meet. It's really fun.
Yeah.
It's really fun just to be like, you know, around like near and meet like teammates that you never knew that you had.
Yeah, totally.
You know, you go out and you get food and people just kind of, it's just fun. You know, yeah. It's a good time.
That's awesome. Wilson, thank you. RPS
up here runs a really tight ship, so.
Oh, that's good. I don't go to anything out here, so it's all USPA out here and USAPL, but USPA is a little stronger. And SPF, of course, because we're the South. Southern powerlifting. They all over the place.